You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rockland, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi there. Welcome to the Dr. Nina Show, Outsmart Emotional Eating. I am your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rockland, and I am here to help you break free from binge eating, stress eating, and any kind of emotional eating. And we do that by focusing on what's eating at you instead of on what you are eating. You know, there's a side of binge eating that doesn't get talked about that much. And that's the whole secrecy part of it. Most people want to hide what they're doing with food. And that means not only eating in secret, but keeping the struggle with binging or emotional eating, keeping that a secret, which leaves you feeling alone and guilty and ashamed, which makes reaching out for help that much harder. Secrecy and shame go together, but we can break free from both, which is why I am so excited to introduce my special guest today, who's written exclusively about secrets and how to break free from them. Gretchen Heido holds the highest designation of Master Certified Coach through the International Coaching Federation. She is a keynote speaker, a facilitator, a trainer. She specializes in guiding people to make high-level transformations by breaking the rules, shedding their secrets, and changing their lives. Her 10-stage secret-breaking system, which we're going to get into a little bit later, helps people step away from their default legacy and lean into a created future. As author of the book, Break Free from Your Dirty Little Secrets, here it is, if you're watching, she is dedicated to helping women break free from the lies their false self whispers about who they are, what they've done, and step into bigger living. Welcome, Gretchen.
Dr. Nina, thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here today.
Well, I am so glad you're here. And I have to ask you, why secrets? Why a book and a workbook?
Yes.
Ooh, you got both. Why a book on secrets?
It's such a good question. You know, for me, what was coming up was that within my practice, I had seen so many women who were really struggling from everything that they were hiding, about what they were thinking, hiding about the way they felt about themselves, as well as some of the things that they had done. And what I noticed is that coupled with coping mechanisms and labels and rules that they live by, these things were creating a cage that was making up their whole life. And so when we start to unwind the secrets and the things that we're thinking about ourselves, others, and the world, we can unwind who we are. And it was really important for me to get in there and to take a look at that.
You know, one of the things I really appreciate about the book is, like you say, secrets aren't only about what you've done. The body shaming, the abortion, the lies, the hidden unkindness, that's just the subject matter. So can you tell more about that? What is a secret? And I just have to tell the people on Instagram, if you have a question for me on Instagram for Gretchen, let me know. If you have a question for me that's not about today, please feel free to DM me. So person on Instagram, that's for you. Just DM me and we'll answer that next week. Back to you, Gretchen. Tell us more about, like, what is a secret anyway? Because that in itself is so misunderstood.
It really is. And you know, when you were asking too, like why I wrote the book about secrets, the other thing is you can't turn on the news without someone having a secret, something there that has happened. And the reason that I really like to explain what secrets are and break it down is that it's not just the subject matter. People often know that thing that you're ashamed of. If you think about some of the things at a high level way, you know, even with the Me Too movement, those all started as secrets, those actions of what was going on and happening, but people knew. So secrets have what I call a 1-2-3 punch. The thing that you did, let's call it the abortion. That's very, very common when it comes to women, the debt, whatever it is that you've collected in that realm. The second part of the secret is the narrative. And this is the most damaging piece that's there, because this is where we say things to ourselves about what we've done. I'm no good. I don't deserve X, Y, and Z. If people found out, they wouldn't allow me to be in the same room with them, watch their kids, be employed by them. I'd never get that spot on that charity board. We believe things then like, I'm a fraud. I'm not pretty enough. If my thighs would just separate and didn't touch. So that second part of the secret is the piece that keeps us so bonded to the past and to shame. And that's what the book is mainly about. And then that third part of the secret is why we created it in the first place. And it always has to go back to our childhood conditioning.
Thank you. People are always telling me, wow, you're a psychoanalyst. Why? It's all about the past. It's not about the past. The past is past. And the whole point is, no, the past is haunting your present. So thank you for that. Yes, with binge eating or emotional eating, same thing. Oh my God, I ate the kitchen last night. That if people knew that about me, they'd hate me. They'd think differently of me. I must hide that. And it just becomes this self-perpetuating cycle. Now, in the book, you share your own secret, kind of started you thinking about secrets, which involved your husband, the church, and a stabbing. I'll just say that and let you take it from there. Tell us your secret.
The husband, the church, and the stabbing. And let me just tell you, everybody, the husband and I are still married, you know, 23 years later. Here's what happened. We're in the middle of this church. I have a broken foot. My husband goes upstairs. My childhood secret of feeling like I'm abandoned and like I'm not good enough gets triggered. I immediately go into panic and I see red because rage was a coping mechanism to look powerful instead of to look weak. When my husband came back down, I really felt like the little girl who was poor, whose clothes were sometimes from the garbage can and who just wasn't good enough. We were in the middle of not just any church, but Bel Air Church. So I was really trying to fit in with people that I didn't feel like I fit in with. So all of my childhood narrative of not being good enough was just there and it was loud. And so when he came back down, I really was out of my mind. I pushed him. I tried to hit him with my crutch. I got out my key and put it at his neck as if I were going to stab him. No, I didn't. I didn't break the skin, nor would he let me, because why would he? But that was a secret. And here's the deal. It wasn't a secret. Everybody saw it. Everyone saw it. But it was a secret to myself that I'm not going to go out and tell people, hey, guess what? I'm Gretchen. And I tried to stab my husband in the middle of Bel Air Church. And here's how I feel about that. I feel like I'm not good enough. I feel violent. I feel a little crazy. How about you? You know, and so that's where when I wrote this book, I thought I can either do it as the talking head master coach, or I can do it as a person, as one among many who has heard a lot of secrets and has helped a lot of people through secrets too.
And it is by, and this is the point of the book, one of the points of the book, by sharing those secrets, by normalizing secrets, by understanding the thing that you've kept secret and shame, that it is by doing that that you actually release the shame and rewrite your narrative about yourself, which is what I love so much about this book.
You know, what I'll say about that too is, first, thank you. And when I tell that story, that's the one that I'm kind of known for if I get asked to do a women's conference or something like that. At the end, where people line up to talk to you, there are always women who say, I always felt so ashamed about my rage, or I never wanted to tell someone what I've done. Women feel terrible about any kind of violence, and we should, you know, there is a piece of that. But for men, it feels a little bit different. But I've had women tell me things like, I tried to bite my husband's leg in the front yard after I found out that he'd stayed out all night. I slashed the keys of my boyfriend's car so that he couldn't leave because I was feeling desperate. I put my hand on my kids too hard because I was feeling frustrated. So it's there, and they feel a little bit better when they hear it. And every time I tell it too, it's like, yeah, that's a really old version of myself. It's not who I am today, but our past can really help people with their future.
Absolutely. If we do not understand and work through process and heal our past, we will repeat them. That's what Freud, we go back to Freud, he talked about repetition compulsion. What is not resolved is repeated. But by resolving it, you're free. And that's what's so beautiful about this work. And I should also say, we do have men listening. Guys are told they can't be vulnerable. So their secret is often, oh, I have soft, vulnerable feelings. And women were told, that's not nice. That's not ladylike. You shouldn't be angry. But then they have no problem getting angry at themselves.
That's it. That's it. And, you know, for the men out there as well, even though this book was really written with the lens of women, I have so many male clients that I've taken through this 10-stage secret breaking system, because we all struggle with that narrative and with the actions that we've taken as well, and those stories. So whether it's, you know, boys shouldn't cry, boys shouldn't have feelings, men shouldn't stay home with kids, we all have these different pieces that really hold us back.
So I have to ask about this 10-step secret breaking system. Please tell us more.
So thank you. So here's the deal with the 10-stage secret breaking system. I like to make sure that things are complete. And when I was writing the book, I was working with someone who said, well, how many stages are there? And I had to think about it. How many stages are there? And it came to me and it became really clear. That first stage is really all about calling out the secret, kind of like we've done today. So I tried to stab my husband. You know, that's the deal. That's what happened. Then we look at the second part. You know, what's that narrative, the thing that you're saying to yourself? Then we get into the childhood conditioning, and we spend quite a few steps on the childhood conditioning. We look at the faulting wiring. We take a look at the feelings that we're chasing. You know, for me in that moment at the church, I wanted to feel like I belong. But then I act completely out of sorts and try to hurt someone that I love that is not going to get me belonging. But that's what we do, you know, and this is the part where people get tripped up. We want a certain baseline feeling. We act totally in the opposite of that. And then we wonder why we can't get it. So we do perpetuate this emotion cycle, is what I call it. Then I do the facing the false self. And this is where we really take a look at the adjacent living and all of the places that, because of our secrets, we're not living our full life. So for me, when I was believing that I was violent, that I wasn't kind, that I was aggressive, people didn't like me, no one really wanted to be my friend, I was too much, you know, I feel like with women, it's always too, put a two in front of it, too much, too little, too heavy, too skinny, too aggressive, too passive. Well, I was too much. And when I was living in that, I wasn't standing in the power of my vulnerability because of all of the things that I'd been taught about being vulnerable. So I really spend a lot of time on facing your false self and what life aren't you living because of the secret narrative. Then we take a look at God of your understanding. You know, some of this, and for some people, they're agnostic or they're atheist, and all of it's okay. But we take a look at, how are you going to get the help from a spiritual presence? Because we're all going to need something outside of ourselves to do this big heavy lifting. Then we're going to take a look at backsliding and making sure that you don't go back to who you used to be when you were stabbing people, when I was stabbing people and cussing people out and getting mad and getting angry and using my old coping mechanisms. Then we take a look at how you can pay it forward. We look at your purpose, and then we look at giving it away. How do you take what you've learned and really reach back for that woman that's still behind you? And that's the 10 stages.
Which you go through in this book and in this workbook, and it's really powerful and really transformational. And that is a word that can sometimes be used too much. Oh, it's transformative. But this really is, because it forces you to look at the story you tell about yourself, the secret and shame that you hide, the false self that you've created, which, of course, when you have a false self, it's like, you know, you walk around with a mask and the mask gets all the love and you're behind the mask getting none of the love, feeling like if they only knew me. And to be able to take off that false self mask and live in your authentic self and feel likable and lovable despite your flaws, or maybe even because of them, is so liberating and so transformational. So I so appreciate the work and the breadth of the changes that you lay out in this book and in your work.
Yeah, you know, and to that point, part of it with this work as well is that when I was putting this together, I didn't just want it to be my voice. And hundreds of women from around the world wrote in to share their secrets as well. And that also helped me develop the system because I was listening for what everyone had in common. So I took all of the years with the people that I've coached, all of these women who wrote something in who really revealed their secrets. And I applied it to that to see, will this work? And I knew the work that I had done, you know, what was the way that I got better and I got free from my secret. And I wanted to make sure it was something that was relatable too, and sometimes funny and sometimes just, you know, kind of takes you to your knees with all of the work that you're going to do. But I feel like I balanced it with just the right amount of everything, you know, the power, purpose, your potential of what you could be if only you can change your mindset.
And with all of these hundreds of people that wrote in, and with all of the hundreds of people, probably thousands that you've coached, what, if any, are the commonalities that you see regarding secrets?
Yes. There's secrets of the body. There's secrets of prostitution where we trade a piece of ourself for something else, like love, value, safety, money. Secrets of who we're being, where we are not being authentic to who we truly are. Secrets of not belonging. Every secret fit into one of those buckets, you know, in some way, shape, or form. And at the center of all of it was really the heart of, I'm not okay. The way I am in my authentic self is not okay. I don't fit right. And that really, what I found was, it's because of either the childhood inherited rules that you live by that were given to you that you don't even know if you believe them, or the labels that we give to ourselves and live up to. But because maybe we've outgrown them, that part of, ugh, this, I can't do this, it's because we're living outside of what society, parents, educational systems, institutions gave to us as our right and wrong and our moral compass without ever taking a beat and thinking, does this really work for me? Is it true that girls are only good? You know, be a nice girl should be something that I should live by. Does that mean that I'm not nice just with who I am? Does it really mean that I should always have to be the one to be nurturing? What if that's not something that I care about as much and I like to be a driver? Does that mean that I'm bad? And so we're constantly feeling that friction of, well, but I'm not right. I'm not quite right. Being who I am authentically isn't quite okay. And that's a secret of itself. And that's the most common one that every single secret, every person I've ever worked with has in common.
So interesting. And each of those people probably feels so alone in that, as if they're the only one. And we create these stories as children. Children are egocentric, right? Every child is the center of the universe. So children create these stories of, oh, it must be me. Oh, I'm the common denominator. They're treating this me this way because there's something wrong with me, which becomes the basis for actually hope. Because if you can change yourself, you can figure out what's wrong with you and make yourself right, then you're going to get different treatment, goes the illusion. But it just turns into this conviction and this belief and this narrative that there's something wrong with us. I just want to say for anyone on Instagram, if you have any questions for my wonderful guest, Gretchen Heido, author of Break Free from Your Dirty Little Secrets, please feel free to drop a comment in the comment box on Instagram. And if you're on Facebook, sorry, I can't see what you're writing. So if you're on Facebook, head over to Instagram and ask me a question, or you can call in at 323-203-0815. All right, you talk about legacy rules. What are legacy rules?
Legacy rules are one of my favorite things to talk about, and here's why. When you think of the way that your life is made up, and you think of the way that you categorize good or bad, right or wrong, what you should do, and the places where you lie, because that's another secret, most people lie as a coping mechanism, it's because of a legacy rule. So I can give you some examples. For some people, there were rules in their home about education. Let's say that your house was a house that was very education-based, and that if you were creative, it wasn't looked at as being important because you were supposed to be smart, but you couldn't be both. Now maybe you're in a career where you're not happy because really you're more creative. Yes, you're smart, but you'd like to do something that's creative. You're following a legacy rule. Maybe there's something there about tradition. Women should stay home and raise their kids. Legacy rule. What if you don't want to stay home and raise your kids? You love them. You'll be there at night. You'll be there when you're supposed to be. They'll have dinner. They'll be fed and happy, and you want to connect with them, but you'd really like to have a career. Legacy rule, and you're feeling bad about it. Maybe it had something to do with a religious institution. Maybe it had something to do with just the very point of being female or male that you're following. These legacy rules are inherited trauma most of the time, that if we go back seven generations, it's like this bundle that was passed down and passed down, then given to our great-grandparents, to our grandparents, to our parents, and they turned around and gave it to us, and we have to decide, do we keep carrying this bundle, or do we need to unpack it to see, do these rules belong to me? Because most of your secrets stem somehow from your rules.
Now, I think actually this is a good segue to Chilla. Her question on Instagram is, how do you get rid of the belief that there's something wrong with you? That's a good question.
Such a good question, Chilla. So here's the thing. When we believe that something is wrong with us, ask yourself specifically, what is it that you're defining as quote unquote wrong? Where did you get that idea in the first place? Who was it? Was it a grandparent? Was it your mom, your dad, your pastor, your rabbi, your school teacher? Who planted this in your head? And really write it down. What was the message that you received? And now ask yourself, how am I living my life? Do I live my life in accordance with this rule? Or do I not believe it at all? And that's why I'm feeling like I'm not good or that I'm bad in some way. Most of the time, it's there. So if you can take a look and really dissect, where was the entry point of this? Who said this? Why do I believe it? Then we can start unraveling it. And just looking at it as neutral, that, I don't actually have to say that I'm bad or not okay or not good enough. This is just something that was given to me, kind of like it's not safe to be creative. It's better to be smart. Who says? Well, my parents said it. Well, do you believe it? You don't have to believe what was given to you. You can put the bundle down.
It's very powerful. I would also add that for some people who don't really know, they can't say, well, this is what's wrong with me. Often when we feel bad as kids, we think we are bad. That gets confused. So maybe, Chilla, ask yourself, if you have, like, what's the bad feeling you have? Name it as a feeling rather than as a sense of identity about yourself. But, you know, whether it's that or what Gretchen just very helpfully said, if you know what it is, then exactly right. You've got to challenge those ideas. And would you think that of someone else? Whether you just have this amorphous sense of it, it's so important to challenge it. This is an idea. This is a narrative that you came to believe about yourself. Nobody is born thinking there's something wrong about themselves. We learn that there's something wrong with it. We learn the idea that there's something wrong with us, and we can unlearn it.
Well, and to your point with that, here's the thing, is that if you think about how you were brought up and the way that you received your value in your home, safety, love, feeling like you were treasured, it all has to do with these rules. And so the something wrong comes from not pleasing whoever it was that decided what was going to happen to you. And most of the time, that part where we innately don't feel like we're okay, it comes from something there. And so if you can catch it the next time in your body, there's that feeling, where is it in your body? And even give it words. What is it saying to you? What is it communicating? You're going to get some clues. And it's not an overnight matter. It's not one and done, unfortunately. You know, we get a chance to do this over and over again, and then to find out, well, what is this touching? Is this about this present moment? Usually it's not. It's usually about the hundreds of moments that you had in your younger self that led up to this big feeling.
Well, and Chilla is saying they feel dumb.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so Chilla, who was condescending to you in your family or in life, or who actually said that's dumb, or you're not that smart, or gave you that message? Because it's there. And my guess is there's something very direct that happened or that was said, maybe by even a teacher, could be anyone, but check in with yourself and then ask yourself this question once you figure out who it was. Why does it matter that they thought that? Why them? Why did you decide that you were dumb because of that particular comment or that moment? And is it true? My guess is it's not true.
Ah, mom was a teacher.
Okay. I had a feeling it was teacher and I had a feeling it was parental. So you had the double there. Mom was a teacher. So Chilla, was it that you could never get straight A's, or what was up with mom? What did she want?
Well, while we're waiting for the answer, I'll say that as the child of two college professors, often, and my mother taught philosophy
with Dr. Nina.
Logic, which meant not only could I not have a discussion with her, I could never win an argument because, you know, everything was logical, not psychological. Hey, there's a reason I'm an analyst. But a lot of people who have teachers or professors, they tend to have the experience of having their parents try to educate them rather than parent them. Do you find that to be the case? We're still waiting for that response.
And she will or won't write back, and that's all okay. 100% that's the case. You know, that a lot of times what happens is if we pick it up that someone is talking at us, educating us, and that's really a kind way to put it, shoving things down our throat, making us feel less than because they know more, it's usually not done out of spite or out of being unkind. It's because they really want what's best for us. I can remember my stepfather at the dinner table always asking me about geography. I was terrible at geography. And you know what? I'm going to catch that. I don't know if I was terrible at geography. I had never applied myself to learn geography. I was 10. I wasn't driving anywhere. It didn't matter. Who cares what all the capitals are of the U.S. that I had to memorize? And I can remember really having a chip on my shoulders because he'd ask me something every night, and it almost became this game of where he was educating me about how close the ocean was to whatever, and I would go blank and then take that story that I'm just not good at geography.
Absolutely. And we have an answer, which is mom would give the message of just get interested in something. And also behave like she wanted to.
Yeah. So Chilla, I'm sending you so much love.
Be kind of angelic and problemless. Oh, so you should not be human is what I'm hearing.
Yes. Oh my gosh, Chilla. Yes. Welcome, welcome, welcome. And this stuff in our earth suit is real, you know, and your mom, she was doing that because she wanted you to be safe. That's always what it is. She wanted you to be safe. If you were angelic and problemless, then you'd be okay in the world. You wouldn't be a target. Get interested in something so that you can be an expert. She was a teacher. That's an expert. And for you, you took it and internalized that as being dumb. So what can you do to really test that theory? Really test it. My guess is you are not dumb. There are things that you are interested in, and there are things that you love and that you know about. Who can you talk to about them? How can you really air that side of you? And where can you today with your mother, if she's still here, be able to love her but not take that in? That, yeah, that's just an old idea. That was a coping mechanism for my mom. That was a rule for my mom, but that rule doesn't actually fit me.
And by the way, you're listening to two smart women. And I think to be listening to two smart women, you got to be kind of smart yourself. So, you know, take that in. You're synthesizing this. You're asking the question. It's you learned this and you got the message that you shouldn't be human and you should be interested and interesting and you shouldn't have problems. I don't know what planet your mother's from, but in here on Earth, everybody has problems. Everyone has emotions. Everyone has stuff. So to feel like there's something wrong with you because you have natural human emotions and conflicts and difficulties, shame on her, I say, not shame on you. Okay, we have another question. This is Wonders in Life. Question for today's discussion. I recently heard the phrase, my body is not an apology. How can I successfully apply this affirmation? Ugh, I have my own thoughts about affirmation, but I defer to Gretchen today. In an effort to take back ownership of my own person and be free of externally imposed shame. Great question.
My body is not an apology. Okay. So when you sit with that, it's true, your body is not an apology, but I would love to ask you, what do you want to do with that? I know you're saying affirmation. I'm thinking more ownership. What if you just own that your body is not an apology instead of having to continue to affirm it? Because when we affirm it over and over, what can happen is the negative's still right there behind it, thinking that it is an apology. So what if you just go and buy the clothes that you want to buy, get in those outfits you want to get in the swimsuit this summer, even if dot, 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 go on the boat, eat at the barbecue, and just start behaving not just like your body's not an apology, but you are not an apology. You are allowed to take up space. That's what I'm getting from that. I might be totally off because we didn't get to actually chat. Dr. Nina, what do you think?
I've heard this many times. Honestly, I have 20 years as an eating disorder therapist. I'm a psychoanalyst. I'm an author who speaks exclusively about binge eating disorder and all of this, and I have no clue what that's supposed to mean. What I take it as, like, what does it even mean? What I take it as, I would say, like, I will not apologize for my body.
Wow.
But regarding these affirmations, to your point, Gretchen, you can say something a thousand times. And if there's a part of you that still believes it, it
That's it.
will not change. This is why mantras don't ultimately work. I'm sorry, you can say it forever, a thousand million times, and you're not going to change how you feel. Got to look at why you feel the way you feel. What is the apology? Where did you learn that? What's your secret? What's your shame? Challenge that. Use Gretchen's 10, not steps, 10 stage secret breaking system to challenge the idea that even makes you think you need to apologize for your body. And I also want to say this. There's this whole body positivity movement, and if people can feel great about their bodies at whatever weight they are, good for them. In my experience, most people cannot feel good about their bodies when they are overweight or they don't feel good in their bodies. And then they feel bad, not just for not being in the shape they want to be in, but then they feel bad because they don't feel good about themselves at the shape that they are, the weight that they are. So it is okay to want to lose weight. It is okay to want to have your body change. That's okay. Just be sure to be loving and kind to yourself as you create the changes that end up in, changes on the scale. So that's what I would say to that. No more mantras.
And here's the other thing too. Where did you learn that you have to apologize for everything? If you're apologizing for your body, I wonder, are you someone who often says, I'm sorry, when there's nothing to be sorry for? So many people do that. Oh, I'm sorry. Someone says something to you. Someone does something. Oh, I'm sorry. You didn't do anything to be sorry for. So instead of apologizing, ask yourself, what about this is true about me being sorry? Most of the time, we aren't sorry. We just feel like we have to be because of a rule that came with it. So unpack it, really wind this back and take a look at what makes you believe that you have to be sorry for anything, really. What did you do something intentionally? I'd take a look at that, but there's a rule here around being sorry, is what I'm hearing.
Which is so prevalent in women. We say sorry for every little thing. You open the bathroom door, someone else is coming out, and you both say sorry. Why are we sorry?
Sorry.
Why? We have just an update from Chilla. Mom didn't say it, but she was more interested in her students more than in her.
It may have been easier for your mom to connect where in a place where she had ultimate power and authority and where she could be adored or feared. And I don't know your mom, so I don't know if that's true, but a lot of times it's easier in our workplaces than in our home life because maybe vulnerability or being a good example are something that elude us and we're doing the best we can. And she gave you be angelic, be problem free as ways to navigate life because she saw that as the easier, softer path. And that might be all that it is. Your mom, I am positive, loved you because you are a lovable human just simply because you're here. She didn't know how to give it to you in the same way.
And Chilla, you're such an example of how we take the way that we were treated, or we see certain situations, and then we interpret them And that interpretation, which is fictional, becomes truth. And really it's just fiction. It's just an idea. It's a narrative that you created. But then we look for evidence that fits the narrative, right? And then that's all we see.
Well, and that I like to talk about too, that we will always find evidence to support our story of lack. So if Chilla, if your story is that you're dumb, you will always find evidence on a daily basis to find evidence to support that. If I have a story that I'm, you know, super hyper focused and fast, I will always find evidence where other people are too slow to make that part of me true. So if you can start looking at it as neutral, really unwinding, and we're seeing where it came from, and then take a look at what's really true, that's going to be where your freedom starts.
Yeah, not an idea, not an interpretation, but just the facts.
Yes. And for a lot of us too, what happens when it comes to our secrets and these ideas is that there's a psychological agreement. There's some kind of an exchange. So with your mom, the agreement got to be that you were quote unquote dumb, and I'm not affirming that, but that you were quote unquote dumb, and she was what? And in exchange, you would get what? You'd be the dumb one, and she could get what because of it? And for some people, what happens is maybe you got to be loved. Maybe she got to make you better. Maybe there was some sort of safety. I never know until I hear it from a person, but really take a moment to see what was being exchanged in this. So in my family, I got to be superior and the good one. And in exchange, I would come and help them whenever needed. That's the exchange. I'm the superior one. I'm the good one. I'm the one that did great in the world. And for them, you know, it wasn't quite the same, but I'm the one that the exchange has been great. They'll think this about me, but I'll swoop in and help. I'll take care of. I'll do whatever needs to happen so that people don't go down on the ship. And that was the exchange for a long, long time. So we always have to look at what's the exchange. And it can be tricky to really see it, but notice it when this idea comes up with your mom, like, oh yeah, what's that exchange? What are each of us getting from that?
Those are excellent points. And I just want to add on top of that, that in our psyche, food equals mothering. Not when we talk about comfort food, we're not just talking about wanting comfort food. We're talking about wanting to be comforted. So if you have issues of not having enough maternal love, enough unconditional acceptance, enough regard, enough anything, you can always get more food, which represents mothering and nurturing.
I had never thought about that. That just put tons of light bulbs on for me. Mother and nurturing equals comfort food. Yep. Yeah, I track with that.
Because our first experience of being held as infants, and we're all safe and warm and cozy, and we've got eyes on us and got arms around us and a blanket, and we're just cozy and we're being fed. So in our psyche, we equate food with relationship.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Unconsciously, we're not thinking like, oh, let me get some relationship, but we're like, our unconscious is, our psyche is. But once you can realize that, then you can heal the original mother wound or father wound or sibling wound or whoever. Yeah. Okay. And you were just talking about the labels in your family, and you were the superior one. Let's talk about labels a little more.
Labels. Yeah. So here's the deal with labels. If you write down every label that you give yourself, could be mother, father, friend, sister, brother, procrastinator, aggressive, nice girl, good girl, rebellious, problem solver, any label. And then write down all of the labels that people have given to you, especially the ones from your parents. You will then see all of the ways that you have followed the rules to be and to live up to those things, because we create evidence to make our labels true. And then you will see all of the coping mechanisms that you needed to stay in those labels. So sometimes it's by keeping secrets. Sometimes it's through lying. Sometimes it's by overdoing, overeating, throwing up, whatever it might be. Sometimes it's by debt collecting. Sometimes it's by shopping. We don't know. Everyone has their own. Sometimes it's by looking so productive, superior, inferior. Those sorts of things come up as part of your labels and your rule system and are almost always a secret. And when we can look at all of these different buckets, the rules and the labels in your life having to do with money, love, career, finances, relationships, friendships, exercise, body image, all of it, you will see how your whole life is created. And we only need to start with one place, whatever the easiest point of entry is to start making a change.
Because we believe those labels, right? That's the problem. We believe those labels. And then when we may tolerate people who treat us that way because it feels like they know us very well, and we don't allow for a different experience. But when we change the label, we change our relationships, everything changes, really. That's why it's transformation.
And that's where your narrative starts to change too. Because if you can believe a different label, you can believe a different supporting story of your inner critic. It doesn't have to be a critic anymore. It can be something different. You know, in our family, you were smart or stupid. That was it. There was really not a lot of in between. I really wanted to be smart. I liked being smart. I liked all of the accolades I got from that. Being creative wasn't looked at as being smart. And I really shied away from anything creative. Well, I'm pretty darn creative. I've written a book. I'm creative. I'm so creative. And when I owned that, so much of my life opened up, and so did the narrative that was in my mind about who I was. And then the labels changed and my whole life changed. I wouldn't be on this show if I hadn't embraced being creative. So changing one little thing, getting just a base entry point, whatever way works for you, whatever feels easiest, start looking.
Yes, when we own our labels, then we're living in an inauthentic way. We are not living our lives. We're living the lives that have been imposed upon us, the lives that we've been told we should lead. And then we're miserable, right?
Oftentimes, very often.
Yeah. If you're living an inauthentic life and you're doing something because you've been taught that that's the thing that you should do, then there's some profound emptiness. Again, can be filled with food symbolically, some hole in your soul, right? And when you change your own narrative about yourself and you're living authentically and genuinely, it's so liberating and life just feels so much better when you're true to yourself.
And here's something else that I'll add on that. If we look at the labels and the rules as neutral, not as good or bad, just as neutral, so that you don't get overly emotional about it, you will be able to do this work easier. And you might be thinking as you're listening, well, but rules are good. You know, we need to follow them to feel safe, or people just shouldn't act in certain ways. That's fine, but question all of them. See why they're really there, because if you don't question them, you're living by the system rather than designing your life. Same thing with the labels. I don't like living under a label that I'm superior, but I do like the label of being productive. So just check them out for yourself. Which ones give you like a yes, this is true about me, and which ones it's just something someone said over and over and you picked it up, but it feels bad. Those are the ones that it's time to discard to make room for others.
Yes, well said. And look at why you think that way, not just that someone told you that way, but you might have gotten the idea that not, this is one I hear a lot, knowledge is equal to intelligence. A lot of times people will say, well, I'm just not as smart as other people. For instance, I don't know all about what's going on politically. So I'm just not as smart as other people who know about what's going on, or what, choose a topic. That's just one I hear a lot. Mm-hmm. Well, they've confused knowledge with intelligence. Knowing about something is not the same as being intelligent. Being informed is not the same as being intelligent. Being intelligent and being smart is how you think. It's not what you know. Just recognizing some of those kind of false equations are super important.
Well, and I'll take it here too. Being aggressive is not the same as being strong. You can be strong, but people might misconstrue that as aggressive if they are weaker in their own spirit. That's not your problem. you know? And so we want to adjust to who we are based on other people. But if you live in, no, I'm actually not aggressive, I'm strong. And take a look at, are there places where you're being off-putting? You can see that and you can course correct if needed. But it's kind of like what you're saying about knowledge versus intelligence. It feels like it's the same, but it's not the same. And it's really important to look at those nuances because those make up the layers of our living.
Yes. And and there are also gender values too. So whereas a man is strong, a woman is aggressive. No, she's strong or she's assertive.
Yes.
We still, unfortunately, in the year 2023, still live with these gender inequalities. And to really challenge them, these are all things we've learned and taken as truth, but we can unlearn them.
Yeah, gender bias is huge. And even with that, when everyone writes down their labels, you're going to see how many of those labels have everything to do with gender bias. So many of the things that you will write down about yourself and the rules that you write down about yourself are what you learned about simply being male or female, in your, you know, in how you were assigned at birth type of thing or whatever it is that you have taken on as your identity. So many are going to come from that identity and from the way that you look at yourself. So if you identify as female, you're going to have a lot of messages and rules there about how you're supposed to be female. I can remember being 16 and having a guy at the bank tell me, women should always have long hair and carry nice handbags. For whatever reason, it's stuck. And I've been so mad so much of my life that I don't have great hair. Like, it's okay, but it's not long and luscious Victoria's Secret looking hair. I could get extensions or something, I guess, but I didn't have that. And I remember feeling like, oh, I'm never going to be a real woman because my hair is not long, or things about our body. I can remember someone telling me something, calling me thunder thighs. It's not a true thing, but okay, I took that on. There's so many things I wouldn't do because of that. And so what I learned is, well, women are supposed to be maybe a size 2 or 0 and their thighs should look a certain way without cellulite. And I felt bad about myself because I've got some cellulite and whatever else. So these rules and these things, you will notice how many of them have to do with your actual sex of who you are. And pay attention to that, because those also don't have to be true, but we take them on and then it keeps us from doing the bigger things in our life that we would do if we didn't believe those rules.
Amen. Absolutely. Yeah.
That's it.
Yes. So if you could give just one piece of advice for someone who is listening to the show or watching the show and thinking, oh, but my secret is different. Oh no, my secret is really bad and I'd be mortified. No one must know the truth.
Yeah.
What would you say to that person who thinks they could never tell their secret?
First, I'd say read the 60 secrets at the back of my book, because there are some real doozies in there. Some that we wouldn't even read on this show because they're really, really doozy. So take a look at those. And it's never about comparing the action. Everyone feels the same on the inside. We all feel the same varying degrees of shame, remorse, sadness, not being good enough, being too much, being too little. So the details of the substance of the secret might be different, but you are not unique in your feelings, and that's good. Tell somebody what you've done. Go through my book and do the 10 stages. Get a hold of me if you'd like to. I mean, there's going to be plenty of places where you can connect, but remembering that when we think we're unique, that actually keeps us alone and it keeps us living on the outside rather than in the flow of life.
I love what you say in the book, which I'm at that point where I can't even read something this far away from me.
I can't see anything.
Okay. Yeah. Our true self thrives on being seen and sharing our tender and vulnerable parts. Beautiful. I'm going to say that again. It's so important. Our true self thrives on being seen and sharing our tender and vulnerable parts. The thing you have to hide is the thing that will actually bring you so much understanding and love and support. Right.
And that's why I always tell my women, it's time to let the cat out of the bag, ladies. It's time to tell your secrets.
So Gretchen, this has been such a remarkable and wonderful conversation. Thank you so much. Please tell people how they can find you. And by the way, I'm going to show, so that you got to get her book, Your Dirty Little Secrets. And it has an accompanying workbook. Fabulous. Tell Your Secret Workbook. Gretchen, tell us how we can reach you and where we can find the book.
Yes. So you can get a hold of me on my website, GretchenHaido.com. You can buy the book on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. And you can also get a hold of me on Instagram, just at Gretchen Haido. I'm so happy to have you contact me, to have you take a look at some of this work that I've been doing. And if it's interesting to you, to join some of my conversation groups on it too, where we really are talking about our secrets and getting into the deeper work of breaking free to being bold. And that's what this work is really about, believing that there's bigger living out there for you, overcoming the obstacles of our thinking, loving ourselves, and then daring to design our lives.
Beautifully put. Thank you, Gretchen. This has been such a blessing to me and our audience. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much. So nice to be here with everybody.
All right, everyone, I'm here. I am here Wednesdays at 11 a.m. Pacific. You can also listen later on LA Talk Radio's archives or, well, anywhere you get podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, of course. Stay curious, not critical. I will see you next week. Bye for now.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.